In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So I'm not a depressed person. I've never suffered from depression. Very thankful for that. But some of the intrusive thoughts would be, well, you could kill yourself. Mm. And it's like, well, I don't want to. So yeah. There's no reason I'm going to. But yeah, you could. Mm. And it's just that what if, like, that's kind of, I think that's the source of all anxiety is what if.
It's mentally yours from Ellen and Yvette. Focus on your mental health, you surely won't regret. It's mentally yours.
Welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's weekly podcast about all things mental health. I'm Ellen, and this week I'm talking to Owen Nichols. He's the author of a new book called Love Unscripted. It's basically like a rom-com in a novel form. We're going to be chatting to him about that and also his own experiences with anxiety, imposter syndrome, and dislocating his shoulder as well.
It's about a projectionist whose name is Nick, and it's kind of a dual timeline thing. So half of the book is set the night that he meets Ellie and they fall in love. And basically it's very much a kind of, that's almost the romance part of the novel. It's kind of like first love, that perfect, like you don't know anybody's problems, you don't know their faults, so yeah, you just great. Kind of, yeah, everything's just perfect. And then the rest of the book is set 4 years later when Ellie moves out, and she moves out for a variety of reasons, which we kind of learn as the book goes on.
Yeah, you don't need to spoil it. We won't push for spoilers. Obviously, this is a mental health podcast, so yeah. How does mental health play a role in the book?
Well, I suppose it's kind of, I wouldn't say Nick is based on me, but he certainly has some elements of me.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of insecurities. They're sort of downplayed, I'd say, kind of in the book, because it's quite a kind of uplifting read, but they're there. And I think they really sort of, the role that they play is kind of showing that men have emotions more than anything.
Yeah.
Which is something that we don't kind of really speak about much, especially to other men.
Yeah.
Somehow we find it quite easy to talk to women about our problems.
Yeah, because you're like, women have feelings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, I had a tweet from somebody today who'd read the like blurb on the front, which is the prologue. And the prologue sets it up as when Nick was younger, he liked this girl, took her to the cinema. No, a friend of his took a girl to the cinema and told him all about this plan to kiss her. And it's like, and Nick gets all kind of upset because he likes this girl, but also the plan he thinks is devious. And the person who read it was like, oh, so does the woman end up with the other woman or the guy? And I was like, no, she's not a woman. She's a guy. That is like a guy. But because he's talking about feelings and kind of how much he likes this girl and how nice she is and, yeah.
I think also because rom-coms, especially in like literature, they tend to be from the women and the men tend to be more like silent, brooding, mysterious.
Yeah.
So it's still, which is bizarre, it's still unusual to have a guy actually openly talk about his feelings, even in fiction.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Was that scary for you in any way, knowing that it's kind of based on you a tiny bit?
A tiny bit. My wife, who I've only been married 3 weeks, so saying wife is kind
congrats.
Of quite a kind of strange thing. Thank you very much. I kind of don't want to say my wife like Adam Buxton says my wife.
I think say my wife. Kind of I love a wife guy.
Not to say that. But she says that Nick is me at my worst and Ellie is me at my best. So it's kind
That's
of,
cool.
I think there's a nice kind of, I have some of his insecurities, but I can also keep it together when I need to.
Good. So how has mental health played a role in your life then?
My life. So before I wrote the book, this was probably going back about 3 years, I was working for a challenger bank as a copywriter. I was just about to move into my first home. We had our two-year-old boy with another baby on the way. And I came up to London for a meeting about some scripts I'd written. So I've basically been trying to be a screenwriter ever since I left university, so about 15 years now. And I had these two meetings back to back, and I'd obviously put so much pressure on them that at the end of the second meeting, I had what I can only describe as a major panic attack. Mm. Kind of had to leave the meeting as it was kind of going on and checked myself into the Soho walk-in centre, and they immediately rushed me into a room, hooked
Did you
me
know
up to machines.
What was going on?
No, I had no idea. Okay. I thought I was having a heart attack.
Yeah.
I was like, this is just something's going on and I don't know what it is. So they hooked me up to the machines and they were kind of like, you're okay, but yeah, you are basically, your heartbeat is twice as much as it should be. I was kind of okay. They calmed me down, wonderful NHS sorted me out and said, yeah, go see your doctor over the next couple of days. But after that incident, I was kind of, I had this just general, like, nothing's going to be okay again. Just the experience of kind of going through it just left me a bit of a mess. Luckily, I had kind of great support network of parents and my now wife to get me through it, but it was a really kind of bad time. And I started, after that incident, I had a lot of intrusive thoughts.
Mm.
So just, they could be the tiniest little things, but I just couldn't shake them. They'd just play on repeat and repeat and repeat. And obviously with a small baby on the way, sleep was an issue.
Mm.
And the more you kind of, sleep is just so important, I think, just to kind of
massively.
Sort yourself out. Yeah. So I made some massive changes. I kind of cut out all caffeine, even chocolate. Chocolate is, I know, it's a ridiculous, like, I think there's a trace amount, but something in my head, psychosomatic, just said,
caffeine.
You can't have chocolate because it'll send you over the edge. And it's absolutely ridiculous. I know it is, but having cut it out, along with the caffeine and the Coke and
you're changing my life. Have you seen, actually, this is interesting, is that there was a study last week that actually suggested, and I thought it was nonsense, obviously, that having dark chocolate daily can actually reduce symptoms of depression.
Yes. No, so dark chocolate, cranberries, turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried all these things. Because
yeah, I think it's nonsense because medication is much better. But I was like, okay, I can do some dark chocolate. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you've blown my mind. I didn't realize there was caffeine in chocolate.
Yeah, yeah. It's trace amount. So I don't think it actually affects my body.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't.
But my mind tells me it does.
Yeah.
So whenever I kind of like, maybe accidentally have some, I'll be like, oh no, oh, intrusive thoughts coming.
Are you still off caffeine entirely now?
Completely, yeah. Wow. No caffeine. I don't drink anymore, again, because that was kind of...
Since when not drinking?
Not drinking probably about 2 years. So after the kind of big incident, I had a few smaller ones and I was just doing things to kind of get myself kind of back to where I'd feel comfortable.
Mm.
And so I made those changes. I drank at the wedding, but kind of only a tiny little bit. And again, like once the kids were out of the way, because that's another thing. It's like the intrusive thoughts and the kind of being around the kids. It's like, I just need to have a clear head. Mm. And alcohol is one of those things that will send.
Makes it less clear.
Exactly, exactly, yeah.
What sort of intrusive thoughts are we having?
So they could be quite small, but some it would be things like there's something wrong with you. That would be the main one, especially after the first panic attack. It was like, no, there's something wrong with you. It's not anything to do with your head. It's something to do with your body. You're obviously ill. Go to the doctors. They'll find it. And that was kind of playing out over and over again. But also things like, so I'm not a depressed person. I've never suffered from depression. Very thankful for that. But some of the intrusive thoughts would be, well, you could kill yourself. Mm. It's like, well, I don't want to, so yeah. There's no reason I'm going to. But yeah, you could. Mm. And it's just that what if, like, that's kind of, I think that's the source of all anxiety is what if. But at the same time, I read a book called, might be pronouncing this right, Steve Sussell, My Age of Anxiety.
Yeah.
So I'm not a depressed person. I've never suffered from depression. Very thankful for that. But some of the intrusive thoughts would be, well, you could kill yourself. Mm. It's like, well, I don't want to, so yeah. There's no reason I'm going to. But yeah, you could. Mm. And it's just that what if, like, that's kind of, I think that's the source of all anxiety is what if. But at the same time, I read a book called, Steve Sussell, My Age of Anxiety.
Yeah.
Child runs out into the road. And some of those what ifs can be really helpful, but a lot of the time they're kind of not so great.
How do you balance that then? Because I know actually when I went into therapy, they were like, you need to stop thinking about what could happen. But you, like you said, you need to do that sometimes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For work.
Well, that's the same. The counsellor kind of said, so the what ifs are, like, are they actually going to happen? Mm. That was a good one. And it's kind of, and in a lot of ways, writing the book was an outlet for the what ifs. Yeah. Like, you kind of use them all up on your characters. So that actually, writing and running and all the kind of silly changes I did to diets and things, they were the three things that kind of got me to the place where I'm much more comfortable, I wouldn't say.
What were the other silly things that you did?
Oh, so like the cutting out the chocolate and kind of watching what I say, so spicy food. Because again, ooh. I think in the Steve Sussell book, there's something about your gut.
Yeah, there's a lot
of brain and kind of like, you know, it's kind of, let's go full.
Full like hippie logic, but it's valid. Like, there's a lot of research into it at the moment. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah, the way that they kind of talk to each other is kind of, I can't understand why from an evolutionary point of view, but it does make sense because, yeah, a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's very trippy to think about. I just occasionally have kombucha. I'm like, it's fine then. It's fine. Nothing wrong
with it. If I take my vitamins, I'll be fine. Yeah,
it's okay. Okay, so that was the silly stuff you did.
Yeah.
What did you do that helped?
So the silly stuff did help.
Yeah.
But I think running, that's a huge thing. So I've always kind of been a kind of part-time runner. I've kind of just every now and again kind of put on running shoes and go out. But then I joined Park Run. So the Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, 5K around the park. And now I do one every week. I'm lucky now that I can write that I don't have the office job. So whenever I want to now, I can kind of just go out into the country and have an hour long run, which does wonders for not just mental health, but migraines as well. I used to get terrible migraines. And then I started running regularly and they just completely went away. And then 3 weeks ago, about a month and a half ago, I dislocated my shoulder. So I couldn't run. And I got a migraine like the third day.
How did you dislocate your shoulder?
I've dislocated my shoulder 3 times now. Yeah.
Oh, how?
The first time I fell down some stairs, it was a February morning, slippy stone steps, and I went all the way down, like didn't hit a step on the way, just went all the way down to the bottom. The second time, I had my 2-year-old on my back, and I was kind of reaching around to kind of grab him because he was about to fall, and because it was in such an unnatural position, I grabbed him, but he sort of like took my arm with him. And then the third time, this about a month ago, I tripped up the stairs and it was just like two steps and I just put my arm out and it just went behind me. And
that's very unlucky.
Yeah, well, once you do it once, it kind of, it becomes a thing. But yeah, we're looking at an operation where they're going to take some bone out of my pelvis, which sounds horrible.
That does sound horrible, especially for someone with like health anxiety.
Yeah.
Any kind of bone operation sounds scary.
MRI scan the first time and I've got one in a week's time and they're not the nicest thing.
Like, yeah.
Headphones on and just kind of shut your eyes.
I had to go to A&E for the first time last week because I thought I broke my ankle, but I just sprained it. It was horrible. Yeah. It was so swollen. Just unpleasant.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Shoe on?
Yeah. So I was drunk, fell down some stairs, woke up the next morning, my foot was like double the size it should be, could not walk, had to lean on my boyfriend and just kind of hop to A&E.
Ouch.
And when I got there, they were like, you need a wheelchair. But it's fine now. It's just painful. I'm on lots of painkillers. But it's very embarrassing. And also, I think there's definitely what you're saying about not being able to run. Just not being able to do stuff really affects how you feel. Like the fact that I can't go to the gym or I can't like go out for a walk. Is that,
yeah.
I feel like purposeless.
Well, I live out in Norfolk and was kind of out in the sticks. So when the shoulder happened, that was no running, no driving as well. So I was like really kind of housebound.
Yeah,
and that was after the kids had chickenpox for like back to back. So I was literally just in my house for like two months.
You'll go stir crazy.
Yeah.
How do you, because obviously also writing is quite a individual isolating thing.
Yeah.
How do you make sure that you don't kind of go stir crazy or just alone with your intrusive thoughts when you're working?
When I'm working, it's kind of not so bad because I won't be thinking about me as much as I'll be thinking about the characters. But I've also got some wonderful writer friends that I kind of can chat to and bounce emails off. And then there's family. And then because I'm a big cinema nut, I kind of always make sure I go out at least twice a week to the cinema. So, yeah, that kind of stops me kind of getting into that loop of like isolation.
And how do you motivate yourself to write?
It used to be the jobs I didn't really like. That was kind of a big motivation. But I was never really a writer until my kids came along. Mm. I was like always pretending to be a writer. So I did my undergrad at Canterbury and then did a master's in script writing at UEA.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that time I was kind of just like, oh, there's a Sunday afternoon, I'll do a little bit of writing.
Mm-hmm.
But when the kids came along, I was kind of, I don't really want them to see Dad so unhappy. I think, well, I've got to do something about this. So every lunchtime at work and when they were asleep at home, I'd do some writing. And that's how the first book kind of came along.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you feel any kind of anxiety putting it out there?
Yes, I did. But I think the people behind it, especially kind of my agent and my editor, have just been so helpful.
That's good.
Yeah, exactly. They've just kind of like put me at ease. And once people start saying nice things about it, it's kind of like, okay, this is actually not as bad as I probably thought it was halfway through writing it. And yeah, there will be people who kind of don't like it. And I kind of made my peace with that quite a while ago. And it's kind of like, that's fine.
People don't like Shakespeare.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's still good. Yeah.
There's a lot of people with a lot of opinions.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, I think that's always the biggest fear, though, like for anyone who's writing, it's just, this is absolutely embarrassingly bad. And if I show it to anyone, they'll be like, what the fuck is this? What have you done? Getting past that bit is an achievement.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Well, there's a lot of friends that I kind of write with that are at that stage where they don't want to put it out. And it's kind of like, having been through the process now, I know that if you think it's perfect, it will get slightly changed. Maybe only a line or two here, but don't get it like absolutely perfect because you'll probably be quite upset when those changes come in. Get it to a place where it's a thing, then send out and let other people judge it because you will be your own worst critic. You'll pick it apart until you never really get it out there. And
that's good advice.
And maybe if it isn't kind of where it should be, the people that you send it to will tell you and then you can get it to where it should
be. And they
can
shape it into something much better.
Yeah. But also, because I don't want my editor or my agent to kill me, get it as good as you want it to be. Don't just send off any old...
Send ramblings to people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you can fix it. Yeah. It's fine. That's your job. Mm-hmm. Do you find writing helps with your mental well-being in general?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. So I used to write film scripts for a long time, and I had kind of modicum of success with them. So I had a couple of things optioned, and we get some very nice meetings where people were saying some nice things. But that was tough because that was a lot of rejection. To get something made in either film or TV, you need about 100 people to say yes. So after kind of many kickbacks and kind of many, like, just almost got my toe in the door but hasn't quite figured out, I thought, I'm going to write a book, because then when I put it on the shelf, I'll print it out myself, I'll put it on the shelf, then it's a thing. And then while a script or a TV show needs to be made to actually kind of serve its purpose, the book, that's mine, and I can put it on the shelf and I can send it to friends and they'll like it, or they won't, but they won't tell me. But at least it's like a finished thing. And so I did that, but then sent it to some places and they kind of liked it enough to kind of make it an actual book that will now be in bookshops. And going through that process has been nothing but good for my mental health.
That's good.
Yeah.
How did you deal with the rejection bits?
The rejection bits, they were really tough, especially when I was kind of working a job that I liked the people, but I didn't like the work. So it was, it was tough. But I've sort of always had this feeling that even if I'm 90 years old, I'll have something that I can kind of, the beauty of writing is that you can write forever, within reason.
Yes.
And I've always kind of had a bit of self-determination that I will get there. So the rejections are sort of part of it. I think you've got to make your peace with them. And I'm really glad I got rejected for some things that I've written, in the past.
That's
like,
good.
I kind of think, oh God, if that had have been made, that would have been awful. And I'd always have that like around. This is going back to the stuff that I was writing when I was like 16, 17. It's kind of...
No, but that's good that you can have that perspective. I think there are lots of things when I was 16, I'm like, no, that was really good.
But you still got that in a drawer, so,
somewhere. Yeah, I think on my old laptop, actually. Yeah. I'll double check. Okay, so that's how you deal with rejection and how you've kind of learned to be okay with it. Have you done that on your own, or did you go through therapy or anything?
I went through therapy for the panic attacks and the anxiety, but not for the rejection. Although we did talk a lot about kind of my writing and kind of why I wanted to write and kind of what it meant to me to be a writer. And I think control kind of came up quite a lot. And I think that was a massive kind of trigger for the anxiety, especially that first day. Because I was in this meeting and I thought, oh, this meeting might be the one that kind of puts me on my path to fortune and glory. And when it didn't work out, I think it was kind of, right, that wasn't in my control. So I just felt horrible. But I think you've got to make your peace with that. That, like, control is such a funny thing, because it's always, life is about strange things happening all the time. And if you could control everything that happens to you, it'd probably be quite boring.
Extremely.
Exactly, yeah.
That's interesting, because you have gone into a field where you don't have a lot of control over everything.
People always talk about, like, the book industry sort of being quite slow and it takes a little while. I was like, no, it's not. It's the fastest thing in the world. It's like 9 months ago, I was in my office job, and now I'm talking to you.
Did
about
you write it in 9 months?
No, I wrote it kind of over the course of about a year and a half.
Okay, fine.
But to get from, like, sending it to an agent, the agent liking it, her sending it, well, her giving me notes, me writing those notes up, then her sending it out, to now, that was 9 months, which is just so super fast.
Yeah.
And then in film, I had a screenplay optioned like about 5 years ago, and the option kept kind of rolling over and nothing ever got made. But it was just kind of, that's how long it kind of took just to get it to some directors for them to say, nah, it's not really what I want right now.
which could just completely destroy your confidence if you have it. Fun. Are you still in therapy now?
No. It's been about a year and a half since I had my last session. Mm-hmm. Or is it a bit closer? It would be about 9 months, because I was kind of telling her the good news as I left. So,
is that what made you decide to stop? Because you were like, things are good.
Yeah, I think that was a massive factor. It was kind of, I thought, I'll see how this next bit goes. Mm-hmm. And if it kind of goes all right, then I won't go back. And I'd never say I won't go back again, because I think therapy is one of the best things in the world. I think people should, it should be, well, as free and available to anybody who gets it. Like, I was very lucky that I was working in a fairly decent job where I could afford to go see a private counsellor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people, you have to wait for the NHS, kind of be waiting a very long time. And I think that's quite off-putting for some. But yeah, I'd say to anybody who needs help to go get it as quickly as you can. Because it's just talking about stuff just stops it being in your brain. It stops it going on loop.
It's having someone to just dump it.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people talk about the stress bucket. Do you know about that?
No.
So it's like, so everyone has a bucket, and you fill it with like stress or worries, etc. And then you have to imagine you have different taps to like let it out. So you could maybe, for you, it might be like writing as a tap, so I can let it out like that. Nice. Or like running is a tap, but also therapy is a tap.
Yeah.
This is very like therapy talk. but essentially, like, it's just the idea that you have to have some kind of tap, or you're going to just overwhelm and your bucket will become incapable of holding anything else and you will have a breakdown.
I think that is exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's probably the case.
Yeah.
Do you still have panic attacks now?
No. The last one I had would have probably been about before therapy. So I sometimes feel very anxious, especially kind of on public transport and stuff, but nothing has ever kind of got me to the stage where kind of shaking and needing to sit down and kind of nothing like that. But genuinely think it's because of all the kind of things that I do to kind of get at, like, release the tap.
Yeah. Do you think also it helps that now you know what a panic attack is?
Definitely.
So if it were to happen again, it wouldn't be like, I am dying.
Yeah. And it was very much health anxiety that was causing the panic attack. So for people to kind of turn around and say, no, it's not your body. Your body is fine. Was a massive help. Yeah, huge.
As long as you don't dislocate your shoulder again.
Yeah, that is not nice, but you're in so much pain that I don't think you could possibly worry about anything else. Yeah,
I would agree. I think any problems or worries you have, it's like, I don't care. My ankle or my shoulder is just in so much pain. Yeah. It's fine.
Kind of puts things into perspective.
Exactly.
Goodbye from mentally yours. So go away, enjoy your day, get on with all your chores. From mentally yours.
If you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed today, please contact the Samaritans on 116 123 or go to their website at samaritans.org. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rate and review on iTunes and come join us on Facebook. We have a group called Mentally Yours. We're also on Twitter, MentallyYRS. Thanks very much to our producer Sam Bonham, Juliet Nichols, and to Lucy Baker for the jingles. See you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.